things, so we wanted to know, we were mainly focused on this kilohertz band, but that's a kind of weak constraint. But basically, are there sources that we should try to find which are from the, some phase transitions or string excitations or basically non-standard astrophysical things?
Right. So much of the recent discussion was concentrated on electroweak phase transitions, puts it in a LISA band, right, in the millihertz band, right? So there's I'm not sure it's relevant for the topic of this discussion, right? I mean, so.
But can you have the higher energy phase transitions?
Yeah, well, in principle, I guess it's that, right? You can imagine in principle the people link it to electroweak phase transition because that's the one that we would guaranteedly have, however, not the standard model phase transition that we're supposed to have. It's ongoing to generate gravitational waves, so there has to be a modified picture, right? I mean, this is. I don't know how much we know about this stuff. How much you're interested, I also don't know.
All right. So we're very interested, but we don't know anything.
Right.
Or we
all scales are part of the Newton constant and particle physics come from stellar model particle physics come from the so-called Higgs potential, which is roughly having this. This form. So it's shaped like that, and that's the temperature zero potential. Now, if you take into account the quantum corrections from various Higgs top loops, etc., this gets corrected and also at finite temperatures. So there is finite temperature, there are corrections, and the corrections are such that they. This is what I'm saying is very uncontroversial. Okay? The corrections are such that at large T, and large meaning much larger than this vacuum. Front V, which is equal to 245 GeV. Okay. So at this temperatures, the potential is actually looking just simply like that. So this is a quartic of positive quartic and negative quadratic term, right? That's how we get to this.
Sorry, what's the physical picture?
The physical picture is that at high temperatures, you have all these particles in the bath, P, W, Z, and so on. These are particles that couple to the Higgs potential very strong, to the Higgs very strong, and all these loops. A T squared correction that positive, so it removes this hump, right? So now the very large temperature, the symmetry is restored, right? So now the Higgs field would like to sit in one of the minima, right? At a high temperature, the minimum is here, right? So this is a very uncontroversial thing that I'm saying, that at high temperature the Higgs well values is driven to zero by thermal fluctuations of all the fields that couple to the Higgs. And at a low temperature, as these particles clear up from the mass, because they sort of decay and then dissipate, then the field moves from, so the Higgs expectation value moves from being zero at high T, moves to Higgs equals to V at 245 GV at low temperature. Yeah. That's the basic process that
nobody doubts that happens in the early universe. Now it can occur in various different ways.
Right? And this is a principle, this picture of phase transition, because very early universe, very hot universe, of which we know very little. Okay, we have zero expectation value, and then we move towards non-zero. Questions? Okay, so this process in general can happen. It's okay to write. This process is you can call it electrolyte phase transition. Now, depending on the particle content, the theory, the electrolyte phase transition, as any phase transition, can occur first order, second order. Okay. So I draw the picture for the second order phase. Second order phase transition is roughly what's happening at the given parameters and the field content of the standard model that we have. Okay. That picture draws basically from very high T, we proceed a lowering T to 140 GV, which corresponds to critical temperature, which when you start having a phase transition. And at that point, your potential starts developing very shallow minimum, where the field defines itself, which later on at T zero becomes this double standard double law. When this is happening, this is a very gentle process. This is second order, has no consequences for gravitational waves, right? So, and that's because everything occurs very slowly on the Hubble scales. There are no big concentrations of energy. Everything is distributed rather. There are no mechanisms to emit it here, right? However, there are some arguments based let's put it hopes based on it's called the electrolyte baragenesis that requires a strong departure from equilibrium. And consequently, first order phase transition.
So that's it. So does quantum fluctuation also emit gravitational waves?
No. This is all this is absolutely innocuous. There are no
big jumps in the in you know actual stress energy, right? I mean, to emit something, you need two neutron stars, two big lumps of matter doing something. Right? Otherwise, if it's smooth throughout the Hubble scale, then nothing is going to happen.
So, now let's have a look how the first order phase transition happens. So, now if for example there are more scalars in the theory, such as like multiple Higgs bosons, which is not excluded, okay, possible. Then this picture. Well, the first order phase transmission goes as follows. You have initially this try to restore the phase, right? Nothing that happens. Then at critical temperature, the picture is like this. I'll try to draw it first. So this is zero, this is V roughly. So the new minimum appears degenerate with this one, separated by the energy boundary. And as this thing, and your system is sitting here. So you keep dropping the temperature, that minimum becomes deeper, right? So this becomes overcritical, right? that's small. But classically, only a certain size of thermal fluctuations can bring you over the hump and put in this true minimum. Okay. So if you look at the space, say you're in the false h equals zero vacuum everywhere because you started here at the high temperature to begin with, but now you start developing as a deeper potential minimum where if you would like to go. So if there is a region of h being roughly v that thermally fluctuates, arises, then there could be two situations. There could be a situation where there is a domain one. So this is a bubble of true vacuum. And there is a domain wall separating between them because you need to go from one value of the field to another. There is a field gradient there. There is energy, positive energy density associated with the domain wall. If this domain wall dominates in terms of the energy balance, this thing sort of shrinks back. It's the same as boiling of water, right? So if you have across the criticality, if you have a small enough bubble, the surface tension would try to shrink it. Okay. However, if you have a large enough bubble, then the volume effect wins over the shrinking effect due to the tension of the wall, and with a large enough bubble, you start having rapid expansion of this walls outside. Okay, so as the universe keeps expanding and the temperature keeps dropping, this gives a deeper barrier and a smaller hump here. So this is guaranteed to happen. Okay, so therefore the picture of the first order phase transition is the picture of multiple bubbles appearing in a single patch scale corresponding to one, or if you like C, probably guys like C, C over H, which is a Hubble scale given at the time corresponding to the critical phase transition. So this is my Hubble patch, and within this Hubble patch, several of these bubbles will appear with a true phase where H is equal to V, percolating and sweeping away the whole space with the wrong mapping. Okay, this is a picture of the first order phase transition.
And can it not be that we are already inside of the true vacuum, and then the basically we are already inside of the expanding bubble? Often people give the picture that we're living in the false vacuum now, and the true vacuum will come sweep through our universe.
Yeah, well, right. This is not the yeah. There are scales involved, right? So it's all scales here, this way, that way. Everything I talked about is in a 100 GeV scale, right? And there is yet another gigantic minimum, possibly, at the grand unification scale or something like that, 10 to the 16 GeV, right? So this. With the current parameters, the probability to tunnel there is no thermal ways of getting there unless you're in inflation. So this is not really all that relevant, the existence of that minimum for the dynamics of what I'm talking about. In principle, at very early universe, right after inflation, maybe we could have gone into that long vacuum. However, that assumes that there is a stair model all the way to 10 to 16 GeV, which is maybe an extreme assumption. Okay. Right.
So why does the potential has to deform this way? Why cannot it just deform that way?
Because both ways are possible.
Okay.
And that depends on the field content. It depends on your theory. The end on the mass of the Higgs boson. Okay. So back in the day, when people thought about the Higgs boson being light, so the typically light bosons enhance the first order phase transition. If you have a heavy Higgs, it gives a second order phase transition. So, and the light and heavy, in this case, sort of the separatrice is roughly 60 GeV, and the Higgs is 145, right? So this the standard picture proceeds like that. Okay, so there's a second order phase transition. I didn't finish here with the punchline, but you guys know that, right? I mean, the bubbles walls collide, right? So they go with the velocity being not too far from the sound velocity in that fluid, right? Actually calculable,
yes,
problem of how the boundary of the new phase sweeps through, but it's some sort of a fraction of the speed of light, right? So, but when the bubble collide, right? In the end, you get emissions of gravitational waves with lambda of the gravitational waves at emission the wavelengths, right? Comparable to the Hubble partial to the sizes of the bosons, right? Then people have quantified the smaller the bubbles, the more violent I think the collisions are, and the stronger the amplitude is.
For our purposes, I think we were wondering, essentially, if these things happen, how often do these happen in the universe as a function of cosmic time?
Right. And so, sorry, I haven't finished here. That this is the minimal thing that happens in the set model that does not generate the radiational waves. Okay? However, there are, like I said, if you modify the theory somewhat in a reasonable way, then you could have it, right? The discussions of having a first order phase transition has happened throughout the 90s, and they were completely decoupled from the gravitational wave physics because that was not the focus. Everyone wanted to get baryon and dibaryon asymmetry from the first order phase transition that might have happened in the early universe. Okay? It's not the only way of getting baryon asymmetry. There are various different scenarios, but this one of them, which happened to require first order phase transition, that inevitably entails emission of gravitational waves with the wavelength at emission comparable to the size of the Hubble patch where this action happens, right? Then of course later on that thing is stretched by the expansion of the universe, and you have some stochastic background of gravitational waves. However, unlike the, say, inflationary spectrum where you have a sort of same amount of power in every decade of the frequency, here you will have a characteristic peak that is redshifted values of lambda from by lambda. Okay? Now you can ask the question, is this possible that you can also have a 2 hertz background, right?
Yeah.
And the answer is probably yes. It would not be an electric phase transition, but it could be a transition, I don't know, in a dark sector or something like that, right?
I mean, if you have a delayed, if the bubble collision happens at like a thousand time, universe is expanded by a factor of 1,000, and then it happens, then isn't it automatically going to be in a more high frequency?
Let me think. I actually think that probably it's if I just take this picture and instead of linking it to the electroweak, right, the epoch, because H here would be known. H and electroweak phase transition at electroweak phase transition, this H is roughly, well, we are radiation domination, so 166 divided by M prime, the temperature squared, and this temperature is of course critical temperature, as I said, is sort of in that range, but it may be changed by new physics that you added to create the phase transition, times the square root to a number of degrees of freedom, which is roughly. Okay, so this that gives you actually a typical frequency for when this thing was created. And then it gets redshifted, so you have to stretch that for the to account for multiply that wavelength, I guess, by the redshift of when it happens. All right, but you can also have, I suppose,
say energy scale, and well, correspondingly, the characteristic sort of wavelength as a desiring principle for your problems. So this electric phase transition, where you receive a properly for the redshift, gives you roughly this roughly gives you this millihertz range. Okay, so we can check the numbers.
Yeah.
I haven't checked it myself.
I am still just confused about the essentially during this expansion. But this is the preferred time for the phase transition.
This happens really quickly, right? Almost immediately, right? It doesn't last very long. And while you have the distribution over the gravitational waves parameters, is because you have different sizes and shapes of these bubbles, right? So it's not calibrated. Right?
Yeah. I'm just wondering. Is there a mechanism by which the decay can be delayed a little bit? Or is it really like one moment in time, or can the universe expand a little more before it happens?
You can go a little bit supercritical, but not by, say, order 100.
Oh, thanks.
I mean, so. Of course, the more supercritical you go, then the stronger probably your explosion will be, and the more of the energy will be shaken off that way.
But I mean, if we don't know in detail, basically the barrier potential, then something like the natural time constant for the tunneling depends on the barrier.
It's right. I mean. This, however, was quantified in various, say, reasonable models that you derived this thing not by hand, by adding new field content in your theory and accounting for this quantum or such thermal corrections to the potential. And usually that happens still. You cannot have this transition delay to say 1 GeV temperature. It will happen around electroweak temperature no matter what, right? So you have that prior, right? Now, is it possible that you can have additional sectors where you can have additional phase transitions? Entirely possible, right? It's not at all unlikely, in which case the F of gravitational waves, right, at the emission will scale as H at this T critical dark, right, which scales as T squared, as T squared. But then this frequency would have to be divided by one redshift factor from the T and scales with Z, right? That's very roughly, right? It's in the early universe. So if F will be divided by the Z, and so F now will be F over Z, and that will scale as critical temperature according to this estimate. So to get to a kV range, you would need a phase transition in that picture, right? I believe earlier in the actual phase transition, in which case you would have started with a much smaller wavelengths, which even though they get redshifted to us, the initial wavelengths frequencies that you start scale as T squared, because they reflect a couple during the time when the transition happens. And despite the redshift, you get a linear dependence. So I have now for the typical frequencies now. So if I apply this logic, and I think electrolytic phase transition leads to 10 to the, millihertz range, right? So to get to kilohertz, I would need to have, six orders of magnitude to a higher network, right? Is anything at 10 to the 8 GeV? Possibly, we don't know, right? We don't have any direct probe or indirect probe of that, of these energies. Now, I've not looked at what the amplitude of these waves will be if that's supplying enough power to be able to do that. So I suppose for the gravitational wave community is if you suddenly have stochastic sort of power in a certain frequency range, it is typically people try to sort of calculate for various models of these transitions, for various scenarios of the wall thickness and how these collisions occur. They try to calculate the spectra, and they have it's a relatively broad in frequency, but it's still well defined maximum in terms of where the power peaks in terms of frequency, which is very different from say inflationary spectrum where you have a normal assumption would be a relatively flat spectrum in terms of power per decay, right, of frequencies.
I wonder how we should motivate this kind of frequency scale. It's okay. I mean, other people can say, find these gravitational wave people may find the first signature of this dark sector. But for us, it would be a little bit better if there was some theoretical motivation that someone would say, whatever it is, like these dark vector bosons or something like that.
Right.
Implies,
right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, of course, particle physics is enormous literature, right? So whenever you go to any energy scale, really, right? And you find some people rooting for that, right? I mean, so. Here what we naively decided that would correspond to 10 to the 8 GeV. This is not an unusual scale for, say, right-handed neutrino masses, even though by itself that would not lead to any phase transition, but there could be the whole sector is responsible for that. It's in the realm of possibilities, right? Another thing that people have discussed, of course, and that I know rough pictures here. The other thing is that people discuss gravitational waves from string reconnections, right? So if you have cosmic strings, the strings that our stringy friends are studying in this building, right? Because they study virtual strings, okay? the actual phase transition, like if you have this is an example of a phase transition, right? But the strings, I guess it's something that is generally even more known, right? If you have, U1 gauge theory, and then you have a scalar field charged under this U1. Uh, And you start from the situation where it sort of fluctuates randomly through the, has random initial conditions. And this the potential for this, and there is a potential which has a very similar form to what I've written before. But if this is that's the case, then if you start from a initial with completely random conditions for this U1 field, later on you'll discover that there are patches in space where the phase of this phi field does something non-trivial, and the end point is would be the kind of cosmic strings that would contain a unit flux of a magnetic field under this new U1, and the phase of this field would do something not trivial, right? It's sketching what our recourse of vortices are in the superconductor, so you can have this in the very early universe. Very much so, right? So this early days pre-CMB, this was one of the leading theories for how the structure might have formed, because this phase transitions from the early universe may have left behind the strings. And the strings would fragment, reconnect, and that would later on seed structures. This is in gross contradiction with the CMB and isotropies as we know. So there are constraints on how much the strings must have contributed to delta rho over rho throughout the early universe. However, it's still at some subdominant level, it's a possibility, and the mechanisms for gravitational waves is when the two strings I suppose when they cross, they can reconnect like that and form sharp cusps that later on kind of being relativistically kind of strung in these directions, and that the sharp angle creates a much of the TMNU, the stress energy that relaxes rather quickly, which is the source of the gravitational waves, right?
I think in our paper we talked a little bit about what the possibility.
In our paper we really talked about the possibility of not the gravitational waves but the actual objects surviving, right?
Yes, but what I'm meaning is. Based on this, we may be able to put some sort of limit on the galactic density of strings. And then if you say that we have certain density of strings in the galaxy, what's the probability of reconnections?
So, this was, I think, even sort of the idea was that 99% of the literature discusses is this processes again happening in the early universe, right? If that happens in the early universe, of course the frequencies, whatever this cusp would create, they would be much redshifted, right? So what Rana is alluding to is that there might be a non-zero density of such defects happening now. So in that case, they could be still non-zero probabilities of reconnection, which could, in principle, create, of course, much harder spectrum. I agree.
And in particular, these things, redshift of 1100 is CMB. So, if these things happen at redshift of 800 or something like that, then their effect on the CMB and the delta rho over rho is just from them being strings. Not from their gravitational waves.
Okay.
Or it's a different constraint that you get.
Right. Right. So I haven't thought about strings reconnecting now. This could be an interesting question, right?
Yeah.
And again, it's when you talk to me, you know, you play with something in the dark sector, then in principle you have only total energy density constraints plus the CMP constraints, but you don't have a specific kind of constraints on the minute details of such sector, right? I mean, that is probably worth looking at.
So you talk about this when the string cross each other, you have singularity, so you emit. I don't know. I think it's equalization.
Yeah, they snap,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They snap and reconnect, right?
Yeah.
And then they have the intrinsic tension, right? And then suddenly they find themselves at with the tension making this angle, right? So they try to minimize their own distance. So they start rapidly that motion.
Yeah, so in the case that you have like domain walls, you have surface colliding with each other, do you also have similar singularities? Although it's a surface, but you have surface crossing each other, do you get
that? Depending on the structure of the theory, the domain wall crossing may lead to string, I mean, the strings that domain crossings and so on. And the strings may end on monopoles and things.
Yeah.
Like that.
And I suppose there's a whole higher dimensional. I mean, this monopoles and strings are 0 and 1, but then we can have two dimensional things and higher dimensional.
Right, two, I understand. Higher, I don't know, right? I mean, the highest weaves is. That's a smooth distribution of three dimensional things is a black hole version, right?
Yeah, sort of.
So sorry if I don't have much more to say, right? It's about anything I know about this subject, right?
I mean, I think it gives us something to read about.
Yes, of course.
There's a standard picture, which of course we can read about, but electroweak scale we can read about. But these days, I think, because of who's here, because WIMPs are dead, we can say like this whole dark sector is now more.
Yeah, no, I totally subscribe to this statement apart from WIMPs are dead, but. I should say that much of this was kind of driven of the electroweak phase transition, was also people jump around because of the LISA project, right? And
then
it's sort of in the domain of LISA, although I don't know how they try to separate them from unresolved binaries that also create similar kind of things, right? I mean, I do not know, right? I mean, it's all in the reviews and so on. However, as Ren is saying, is that in principle you don't have to concentrate on one possible phenomenon, that there could be many things in the dark sector. So things that have occurred in the early universe and therefore might have left an observable imprint on gravitational waves, and things that are happening now. And then among the things that are happening now, maybe you get some sources of gravitational waves, or you may have actual objects passing through us, right, which would create some sort of a strange signatures like pools on masses, on light on mirrors, and so on.
But I thought even something more interesting is, we were discussing these terrestrial Sagnac interferometers, like 10-kilometer thing, and it would be interesting if they have a string collision that you would see basically a topological effect in it.
Even the phenology of these things are not well studied, right? I mean, so I'd say that the best case scenario, if you have some sort of domain walls passing through you, right? Because then it's guaranteed that it will pass through all the detectors, and each and every of them will detect some sort of signal, right? So if you have say, a domain wall, if this is my, say, or your, three LIGO test masses, right, or whatever, and then if you have a wall sort of getting between these two, right, then there would be a relative acceleration towards, right, and then the dual exit, right? So it will clearly be a perturbation, right? This perturbation is going to be then seen in other instruments, but the interesting part, the geometry of the domain wall is similar to the wavefront of the gravitational wave. However, the propagation speed is going to be completely different. It's going to be three orders of magnitude smaller, roughly, than the gravitational wave, because then those would see, and any galactic object would go with 10 minus 3 of c, right? That's because if it's virialized, that's how it would go. So anyways, this is a lot of phenomenological signatures that's not being studied, right? And that requires, of course, quite a bit of exotic things happening now, that there is like this diffuse backgrounds that are affecting, I mean, the microscopic size objects that persist, right? That it's so, let's put it this way, not excluded.
Thank you.